Morning, everybody. Today's shiur is about mechila, forgiveness, and the title is How to Gain Forgiveness, and the title has a dual meaning. One meaning is, how does one gain forgiveness for something that he has done to somebody else? And the second meaning is, how does somebody who wants to forgive someone who did something to him actually reach that place which is called full forgiveness? And I want to introduce this shiur with a story, which really is the story that motivated me to do the research that ultimately resulted in these source sheets. And the story goes that there was somebody who hurt me, a minor hurt, I'm not going to say what it was, and it bothered me for a little bit, and came the Yomim Noraim, came Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so I said to myself, and I said out loud, I hereby forgive everybody who harmed me, who hurt me, who sinned against me. And I thought, very good, I've forgiven them. And at the time, truthfully...
Don't you have to actually say it to the person?
Not to the person. You can say it to yourself also.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Don't forget, you are not asking his forgiveness. Yeah. You're forgiving him. So.
Some people have a custom to recite before Shema every single night, I hereby forgive anyone who sinned against me today. So that you don't need the person to be there, just the verbal declaration would seem to be enough. And in fact, when I was in elementary school, so in Yeshiva Darach Torah in Far Rockaway, every single year before Rosh Hashanah, there was an assembly for the whole school, and Rabbi Bender, the Menahel, used to say and have everyone repeat after him, I hereby forgive anyone who did anything against me this entire year, and I hope that the same way that I am forgiving them, that Hashem will also forgive me.
Rabbi, so interesting, because my son, Rebbe told and the whole class, and both class, boys and girls, that they have to call each person at Bet Mechila. And that's exactly what I thought was a wonderful thing. That's a wonderful thing. Call at Bet Mechila.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hope to come back to that.
Oh!
I hope to come back to that because maybe there's a machlokas between Darach Torah and Hank about whether you just make an assembly and have everyone say I forgive you, or whether you ask everybody to call and beg for mechila. So hopefully we'll return to that. Everyone, keep it in your minds.
I'm sorry I interrupted. I thought that was important.
It was very important. So at the time that I verbalized this declaration that I hereby forgive this person who hurt me, that at the time I did not really feel hurt by them in particular. I felt proud about it. What they had done was done, and it wasn't bothering me at the time. But then, a few months later, something occurred which reminded me of what this person had done. And then I felt bad about it. I felt hurt again. And so I asked myself, was my forgiveness really a forgiveness? At the time, I said I forgave them, and I wasn't really feeling bad about what they had done. And then, because of something that occurred a few months later, suddenly I felt bad about it again. I felt sort of hurt from them once again, even though it was through no fault of their own. And I wanted to know, is there a problem with the forgiveness if I felt hurt by them again? And it took me a couple of years until I found a good raya that there's no problem with the forgiveness, even if a subsequent event can cause me to feel hurt again. And my raya is from the psukim. It's actually a Rashi ala Torah that appears in the context of the Chet HaEgel. We know that when the Jews sinned with the golden calf, so Moshe pleaded with Hashem, and he said, "Slach na la'avon ha'am hazeh kegodel chastecha, please forgive this nation." Vayomer Hashem,
Salachti
kidvarecha. So Hashem said, "I forgive you." And then Hashem goes on and says, "Uviyom pakti ufakagti aleihem katasam."
He didn't say, "I forgive you," to Moshe. He says, "I have forgiven."
Forgiven.
Salachti.
Like you said.
Like you said.
Yes. Yeah.
I have forgiven according to your request. But I didn't forgive you.
So it seems that Hashem forgave the Jews, and had they not done anything to remind him of the Chet HaEgel, so then that forgiveness would have been enough. However, on a day when the Jews do an action, they do an Aveira reminiscent of the Chet HaEgel, Hashem says, when they remind me of what they did to me, so then I will also remember the Chet HaEgel and visit on them an extra measure of punishment, adding on the punishment for the Chet HaEgel to whatever Chet they did to remind me of that. And that seems to not be a problem. Hashem said, Salachti kidvarecha, I have forgiven you like you asked me. And yet Hashem says that if you remind me again, if something causes me to remember the Avira, so then I will remember it again, I'll feel bad about it again, and I will visit some punishment on you for that particular Avira. So that I felt was a good raya, that the forgiveness that I had forgiven this person prior to Rosh Hashanah was a valid forgiveness, even though something reminded me a few months later and made me feel bad about what that person had done to me again.
Cheder Rishon required reminding Hashem of a problem, or is it just always going to be with us? Adam Rishon.
It's always with us. It's here now.
That's a cogitating on that, really.
It's a good question.
Yes, a very good question.
No, there's only a permanent constituent.
That means it's never forgotten.
It was already decreed that it would be death because of that, and that's it. That's the end of it. It's forever. You don't have to remember it all the time. It's a given.
I don't think we find in the Mefarshim that we're being punished for Adam Rishon's Aveira. I'll give you a mashal. Let's say that there's a person and he's very wealthy, and then he does something that's against the law and he gets a tremendous fine. And so he has to give away, lo'alinu, a lot of his wealth. And now his children are not going to inherit the same wealth that they would have inherited had he kept his wealth. So would you say that the fact that his children are not as wealthy as they would have been is a punishment for the children? Or is that an organic consequence of the punishment that the parent was made to suffer?
That's something to think about.
You're supposed to have a certain visa and pain in childbirth is not exactly it seems a little bit more extreme than that, but...
For Adam, it was a punishment. For us, it's a condition of life.
Right.
It's a
good,
which you're born in.
It's a very good question. I think that this is not the first time that the Chet Adam Arishan has come up. I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to prepare. I actually will be here Be'ezras Hashem next week as well. So
good.
I'm not sure if I'll have a chance to prepare something on that, but I'm going to look into it and hopefully I'll find something.
Yeah, homework, baby.
It's good.
Don't do it on Shabbos. It's the worst one as far as
no.
Burying.
But why not? What,
Hashem seems to bear over. It's written all over. Hashem, Tzavta, Midbar. Hashem seems to have a grudge, and we have to. I'm just trying to be fair. You know, we have to not have grudges. But with this Sedra, it's the most to read it. I mean, I laid it. I mean, it's your heart just pops out. Just read these words. Hashem, Tzavta, and Min Hayom, Hashem Yadata. You've always been bad people. And people, how many shows late does every
shot miss? So, I'm going to get to this in a moment, but I'm going to bring it earlier in order to answer your question. There's a big misconception about the prohibition against bearing a grudge, a major, massive misconception. And I'm always reluctant to debunk this misconception, because I think that it's overall a positive misconception for people to have, because it motivates people to be much better than they would have been or than they would be if they understood everything properly. However, in the interests of MS, Amita Shel Torah, I will debunk this misconception, and I'm going to rely on everybody here not to lower their standards on account of being aware of the MS. The Gemara in Yuma, around Daf Chaf Beis, tells us that the only prohibition against bearing a grudge is when a person didn't suffer personally at the hands of the one whom he's bearing a grudge towards. In other words, the Gemara says the classical case of bearing a grudge is if I asked somebody, let's say I asked you to borrow a shovel, and you didn't borrow the shovel, you didn't lend it to me, and then the next day I go and I say, can or you ask me to borrow my shovel. And I say, yeah, here it is, I'm not like you. I remember that you didn't lend it to me, but I'm lending it to you. That is netira. I'm lending you the shovel. The comma is if I don't lend it. So the Gemara says that what defines this example is the fact that by refusing to lend me the shovel, you haven't actually harmed me. You haven't hurt me. You haven't hurt my feelings. All that you've done is that you've neglected to give me an opportunity or a means to accomplishing something that I wanted to accomplish. However, says the Gemara, if somebody hit me, or if somebody insulted me, if somebody hurt my feelings, there is no prohibition against bearing a grudge. That's not included in the Isser of Lo Sitar es Bnei Amecha. And one of the proofs that the Gemara brings for this is a Braisa, which appears in Yuma and in Gittin, which says, Hane'elavim, ve'enam olvim, those who are insulted, but do not insult others, Shomim cherpasam, ve'en meshivim, who hear people shame them and they don't respond, Aleihem hakasuv omer, the Pasuk says about them, ve'o'avav kitseis hashemesh, so that those who love Hashem are like the sun in its strength. So the Gemara says, what do you mean they're like the sun in its strength? They've simply fulfilled a mitzvah. Do we say that someone who takes the lulav on Sukkot is like the sun in its strength? Do we say that someone who gives tzedakah is like Hashemesh bigvuraso? Why are we giving so many superlatives to a person who merely has fulfilled the mitzvah of not bearing a grudge? And to that the Gemara answers that if a person is an aluv, if he's been insulted by somebody else, if he's shomea cherpaso, he hears somebody ridiculing him, there is no prohibition against bearing a grudge. A person who feels really hurt is permitted to remember that hurt until the one who hurt him appeases him. There is no isser of bearing a grudge. So I think that that's the answer to the question that you asked about Hashem. What we did to Hashem wasn't simply failure or neglect to give Hashem kiviyachol the opportunity to do something to garden in his lawn, because you know he didn't have a shovel and now we didn't give him the shovel, so his lawn is going to remain ungardened. What we did was really a personal affront to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, even if Hashem was held to the standards that he puts forth in the Torah, even if he had to keep all Taryag mitzvos, we would still say that he's not in violation of any particular mitzvah. We'll get to that again, hopefully, in a moment. It's on page 2. So, now I'm getting to the point that I was actually planning to begin this year, and that is with the following question. What is mechila? What does forgiveness mean? And to explain the question a little bit better, I'm going to return to your machlokes that you mentioned between Yeshiva Darachi Torah and Hank. And this is, it's a machlokes vishonim. Don't worry, it's a machlokes vishonim. No side is without precedent. And this is the machlokes. One side says that mechila is simply a verbal declaration. Just like if somebody owes me money, and I want to be mochel the chov, I want to be mochel the debt, I want to forgive the debt, so it's sufficient to get two witnesses and say in front of the witnesses, I hereby forgive this debt. From then on, the debt is no longer collectible. So the same is true when it comes to personal affront, when it comes to avonos shebein adam lachaviro. All that is necessary is to say, and not even in front of witnesses, just in front of God, I hereby forgive this person for what he did to me, and that's it. The mechila is effective, you have been mochel the person is nimchal. That's opinion number one. Opinion number two says, not at all. Mechila is an experience. It's a chavaya. It's something that a person needs to feel. A mechila that's insincere, a verbal declaration without the heart in it, is not a valid mechila. And it may even be gneivas das, precisely. If you tell a person, I'm mochel you, and really, you're not mochel him, then he's going to think that he got mechila, and he's going to stop trying to appease you, and then he will never get forgiveness for the sin that he did. Yes?
I'll let you finish, so I have two questions on that, but I'll let you finish.
Okay, so let's see whether the questions will be answered in the course of this year.
Okay, I'm going to go inside. I just want to ask one thing regarding when you say Kriya Shema Lamita beforehand, there's often a little introductory prayer. Harin Enei Mochel Chutzo Le'Kol Misheni Kniza. That is, in fact, saying the Mechila. So if you're not really feeling it, then you could be varying what they're saying, whatever the Gnei Batas.
There, you're not giving them a misimpression, though. Gneivas das is giving a person a misimpression. So if you say that, they're not getting a misimpression. It may not be effective. It may be a waste of words. But it's not gneivas das because it's not misimpressing anyone.
And then also there's also the thing where you often said, like you were saying yesterday, that oftentimes there's a shita that if you are feeling happy, well, smile and act happy, and you'll start to feel happy. So if you're feeling for mechila, forgiveness, say it. Say forgiveness, and throughout the Shem, it'll come.
Sounds good. I'm not sure. So I have to check the history books. So a second way to phrase this question is the following. Is mechila simply the removal of a grudge? I have a permissible grudge against this person. He hurt my feelings. He hurt me physically, so I'm bearing a permissible grudge against him, and then mechila is the removal of that grudge. In other words, removal of the hurt in my heart that I feel towards this person. Right? Or is mechila totally disassociated from bearing a grudge? Perhaps I can continue to bear a grudge in my heart, again, if it's a permissible grudge, I can continue to feel hurt about what this person did, and nonetheless, I can be mochel them via a verbal declaration. By the way, according to that, the story that I said all the way at the beginning, the person who hurt me and whom I said I forgave on Erev Rosh Hashanah, and then a few months later, I felt hurt again. According to this opinion, for sure it was a valid mechila, because a person can bear a grudge straight through. He can bear a grudge while he is verbalizing the mechila declaration, and it doesn't detract from the effectiveness of the mechila, according to this opinion. Mechila is a verbal declaration. It has nothing to do with what you're feeling in your heart, and therefore, you can forgive a person even if you still feel bad about what they did to you.
Badly.
Badly. Okay. Baruch Hashem.
You can feel bad, just you shouldn't get an aveira for it. It's two different things. I want to erase the aveira the person gets. I'm mochel, but I'm still upset with him. I still hate him. I still all these things. But as far as the aveira is taken off.
Right, so that's the opinion that says that mechila is just a verbal declaration, and it doesn't need...
You mean it, that he shouldn't have an aveira, but you don't really like him. I know you're not going to be his friend.
You don't want him to be punished. You don't want him to be punished on your account,
right.
But you still feel bad.
Sure.
I just want to point out that once a person steals from you, even though the person might return the thing, you forgave him, you still know the person's a thief and you can't trust him. You know, it's never going to be a total forgiveness because it still makes an impression on you.
Yeah.
In other words, if you're in the eyes, you forgive it. Is that what you're saying?
I can forgive that particular act, but it's still a type of person. That's not going to change.
Very good point.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of halachos about this, because a person who steals is disqualified to be a witness.
Yeah.
And the question is, when do we consider a person to be rehabilitated for the purpose of believing his testimony? And there's a big sugya in halacha about this. And then there's a second sugya, which is, if a person already has a criminal record, is it easier for them to lose their ability to testimony if they have a relapse? Meaning, are the standards for relapse lower than the standards for first-time offenders? So this is a big sugya in halacha, the halachos of witnesses, of testimony. Major, major sugya. So now let's turn for a moment to the sources here. The first source to look at is the Rambam, and this quote from the Rambam parallels the Rambam that we read yesterday in Sefer HaMitzvos. And the Rambam writes here, courtesy of the fact that this source sheet was prepared a few years ago when I was wrestling with the question that I was wrestling with, so it also has English translation, so we'll read from the English translation. Sins between man and his friend, such as striking one's friend, or cursing one's friend, or stealing from him, are never forgiven until he returns what he owes and pacifies his friend. So this is indicating that it's not enough to simply give back the money that was stolen, because when somebody steals from somebody else, it also is a personal affront. And therefore, both elements of the theft must be addressed. Both the fact that you caused the person a monetary loss, and the fact that you caused a personal affront. And the monetary loss is fixed up by returning the money, and the personal affront is fixed by pacifying, by trying to appease the person who was offended. Even if he only angered his friend with words, he must appease him and cajole him until he forgives. If he does not want to forgive, after being cajoled properly three times, leave him and go away, and his friend who does not forgive is a sinner. So the Rambam here sets forth for us that it's incredibly important to reach forgiveness, whatever mechila is. The Rambam says that zeh shelo machal hu hachote, a person who does not forgive somebody after he's been properly appeased three times, is considered a sinner. So this is very important. Just give me one moment. It's very important because now this machlokes is a machlokes lemaisa. If a person doesn't want to have the chait of neglecting to forgive somebody, is it enough to simply verbalize forgiveness? Or does the person actually have to work on themselves until they no longer feel bad about what the person did to them? It could be that the mitzvah of being mochel somebody is only fulfilled when the person reaches a state of catharsis, a state of freedom from the hurt that the person did towards them. Yes?
The uniformity, I can see some great exceptions. The person did to you, the person broke your shadow, which is irreparable. Or even the person you have, your father, it was 43 times, huh? But I was close. 3 times enough. But father's enough, but that's enough to be.
For some people, it has to be more. But that, I'm not sure whether that changes the fact that the other person is maybe being kavod or something else, that you're supposed to keep on trying to appease them, because if they still feel so hurt that they're not even saying that they forgive you, so then you may have an extra obligation to appease them and to take away the hurt. But does that mean that they're not a chote? When it comes to a Rebbe, the Gemara Yuma has a discussion that it could be that a Rebbe is not supposed to forgive his Talmud up until a certain point, which may be different, but if there are other cases where you're supposed to ask more than three times, and there is a possibility that even though you're supposed to continue asking, the person whom you're asking for forgiveness from is still considered a chote if he neglects to forgive you. I'm not gonna say that with certainty.
What he did to you, that's the first time we see Shemrayim, but not far. It spread like a story of the feathers, you know? It's almost irreparable. Or you did somewhere to certain damage which is beyond repair.
So what you might be able to say is that what does it mean to be mefayes properly? To be mefayes properly, the degree of contrition, the degree that I feel bad about what I did, has to be somewhat parallel to the degree of what was done to me. So it obviously a person who's trying to be mefayes somebody for being motzi shemra or for breaking a shidduch will have to do a lot more to demonstrate his sincerity and his empathy and his feelings of regret than a person who merely, you know, did something much lighter, you know, gave me a little, you know, slap on the cheek or something. So there has to be proportionality between the chait and the pius. There are ways to do it. I just read an article in one of the popular newspaper magazines about somebody who accidentally ran over a child, Chas v'Chalila, and then that person, he felt so bad about it that by the end of the Shloshim, or the end of the year, he was almost now like a family member in that family where the child belonged to. So it's definitely, if a person really feels it, and he communicates it, the fact that he's really feeling bad, he's really feeling the pain of the person whom he hurt. So it's possible even for the worst hurts to be overcome. You're saying it's harder for Americans. That was the story in Eretz Yisrael. So Americans have psychologists to help them. That's so this is what the Rambam says, that there's pius, there's appeasement, and then after the appeasement there should be forgiveness. The Rambam continues, a person is forbidden to be cruel by refusing to be appeased. He should be easily placated and hard to anger, and when a sinner asks him for forgiveness, he should forgive with a full heart and a willing spirit. Believe shalim ubenefesh chafetza. Now those words,
I italicized.
Why did I italicize them? Because they're key words. They answer this question. They betray the Rambam's feelings about this question. The Rambam feels that a mechila needs to be rooted and embedded in the heart. It can't simply be from the lips and outwards. Mechila needs to be with a lev shalem, with a full heart. And part of what that means is that it needs to be with a nefesh chafetza. It's got to be that you want to forgive the person. Not that the person is dragging the declaration of mechila out of you. Not that he's holding you hostage, that Hashem won't forgive you on Yom Kippur unless you hold me. There's a shiur, there's something missing from a mechila that's dragged out of a person simply because the person is worried about what's going to be with my own din on Yom Kippur. It needs to be with a nefesh chafetza. I want to forgive you because now I feel your pain for feeling my pain. That's a bit of a mouthful, but I think that's what the Rambam is describing. The Rambam continues and doubles this. He repeats the same idea, and this time in different words. Even if his friend pained him and sinned against him grievously, he should not take revenge, nor should he bear a grudge. What's the connection between bearing a grudge and forgiving him? So again, the Rambam is lishitaso. He's consistent. Because the Rambam believes that a true mechila, a full mechila, is only a mechila which comes from the heart, is only a mechila that a person experiences. It's a feeling, not just a statement. Therefore, mechila is really the inverse of a grudge. It's really the removal of a grudge from the heart. So this is the opinion of the Rambam. And I think that this opinion is articulated very beautifully by Rav Shlomo Volney in the Ali Shur. The Ali Shur writes, one who has not uprooted resentment from his heart is not allowed to say with his mouth, I forgive you, since this is gnevas das, exactly like you said. If he says he forgives, but resentment remains in his heart, his friend will not appease him anymore, since he relies on the forgiveness, on the statement of forgiveness. But the forgiveness and the initial appeasement are not enough, they're null and void, and Yom Kippur won't be mechaper, it won't atone for this friend, and therefore, by saying I forgive you without feeling it, according to the Rambam, at the very least, the person is actually causing his friend to lose the potential forgiveness of Yom Kippur.
The Masilus Sharon writes that if you have enough pain, if I understand it correctly, if you have enough pain about the fact that of empathy, then that in itself is enough of a mechila. In other words, the problem here is in the person who is not forgiving. It's his concern in the sense that he can't forgive. Why should he force the other person to try to appease more if it's the concern in me that I just can't forget this problem or this issue or this thing against me?
So let's work together for a second. You're coming to me and you're trying to appease me, and I'm having difficulty being appeased, and I can't afford a psychologist. So here's what I say. Let me make you a deal. I want to be appeased. You want to appease me. Let's work together. Let's talk this out. Let's go through. I'll unburden myself to you, and I'll tell you everything that I was feeling because of what you did to me. You know, over all the time that intervened between when you did it and now, and I'll tell it all to you. And let's work the two of us together because we both want me to forgive you. So let's work on that together. That's part of the appeasement process. So it's true that you may have fulfilled your obligation by doing a certain, you know, whatever, you know, the minimal standard of appeasement is, but if you want the mechila that the Rambam is describing, so it may be that you need to work together with me a little bit in order to reach the mechila.
So the Rambam is saying it's got to be like a partnership.
It needs both parts.
Yeah, no, it's got to be a partnership.
Or the partnership is something which, there are some people who are very, very versatile with their emotions. They're able to control their emotions very well. And so then for those people, they can really work alone and take away any grudge, any ill feelings that they have towards someone who harmed them. However, there are some people who find that a lot more difficult. It's very, very difficult. A person hurt me, and he's not really doing very much. He's just trying to fulfill his obligation to make me feel good. I can tell that. And so what am I going to do to appease him? So maybe I need him to work with me then. So it's not a necessity, but it's definitely something helpful.
Sorry, the question is bothering me. That's why I need to ask it. Nachum touched on it before. A guy comes up to me, Erev Yom Kippur, and I know he did something horrible, and he asked for forgiveness. And I'm grateful he asked for forgiveness, but I know it's going to take me maybe weeks to work on myself, to work this out. But I don't want him on the record upstairs holding his Savera. So I say, I forgive you. That seems to me to be a kosher way to handle it, even without the giving up the grudge, because I know it's going to take me a while to work on it. And now that I've forgiven him, I can actually work on it more. According to the Rambam, this wouldn't be a kosher mechila. I don't see any other way to deal with it.
You did do your part.
Yeah, but this means
but this is Erev Yom Kippur now.
So let me put on my brisker hat for a second, and I'll formulate a response. I forgive you according to Rashi, who holds that mechila is sufficient just with a verbal statement. And as for the Rambam, I'll work on myself a little bit more to try to forgive you. And if I have difficulty with that, I'll call you up in a few weeks, and maybe you can help me work on it.
Excellent answer. Excellent.
I see light at the end of the tunnel. I see light at the end of the tunnel, but there will be forgiveness, but I'm not there yet.
It's an oncoming train.
But for the record, this is Erev Yom Kippur, so...
Also, I was out there in Israel, and I told my Mashiach, I'm not forgiving this guy no matter what happens. He was Lord, would be the Rama, and you got to forgive him. If you ever see him, the next day he shows up at Yeshua, and he was all totally unexpected. He came looking for me, and he asked, I should give him a tefillah. I just heard from my Mashiach that I'm supposed to do it, but I didn't really feel like doing it. I told him, this guy is not forgiving him. And I said, I forgive you. And he told me you did a great thing for me today.
According to Rashi.
This person did me a favor. I went to him and I told him, I'm sorry things I did to you when I was your roommate. Then he starts telling me, enumerating in a mental list of all the things he did. And he tells me, I did this to you. And he didn't ask me to forgive me. He was like, tell me. But I felt awful hearing these things.
And you regurgitated too much.
So I didn't answer anything. You did me a favor. But I just felt real bad. I just want to know, what do people think? Did you do the why was he telling me all these things? He was telling me all these things. And I felt really bad. I said, oh my golly, if I would have known that, maybe I wouldn't have thought, I don't know.
Okay, so we have to...
After
the shiur, we can discuss it. We can discuss it after. So we'll discuss. But Bezras Hashem, after the shiur, I don't think I put my phone number here, but I can give you my phone number also.
2 o'clock in the morning.
We'll get to it. So Rav Avi brings down an amazing story to support his opinion. Rav Avi brings down that somebody once spread some slander about Rav Elyo Lapyan. And then the person thought the better of it, and he came to Rav Elyo and asked him, Rabbi, please be mochel me. So Rav Elyo said to him, he said, I can't be mochel you today. What I'm going to do is, over the next week, I'm going to add on an extra half hour daily to my Musar Seder. I'm going to learn extra half hour, extra Musar Seder for a week, and hopefully by the end of the week, I will have reached the point of Mechila for you. Come back to me in a week to make sure that I've been mochel you. So that really is the Rambam Shita, that a person needs to work on themselves. It's an obligation to work on oneself, not an obligation in the sense that you're transgressing bearing a prohibited grudge. It's bearing a permissible grudge, but nonetheless, there's an obligation to work on oneself and to dispel even that permissible grudge, and that is the obligation to work towards, to try to gain, to achieve the state of being, the unburdened state of being, the state of being where you don't have the hurt resting and sealing off the heart, which is called mechila, which is called forgiveness. So now I've been saying, Rashi is the Bar Plukta of the Rambam. So what is this opinion of Rashi? So here we have that on page 2. It's a very interesting story. Rashi brings down the following story, that two people fought with one another, and one of them hit his friend, who jumped and swore, I'll never forgive you. A Shavua. Then, when his anger abated, he regretted his oath and wanted to forgive him. So the question was posed to Rashi. Is this considered nishba levatel es hamitzvah, in which case the shivua, the oath, would be totally null and void, ineffective, because the person is mushba v'ome mi'ar Sinai to fulfill all 613 mitzvos, and therefore a subsequent shivua can't override the original shivua? Since it's written that a person is not allowed to bear a grudge. So if I swear never to forgive a person, have I essentially sworn that I will hold an eternal grudge against them? Or perhaps not.
Why can't you say it's against the Torah? Like, for an example, if someone swears he's not going to keep Shabbos, that's nothing.
Right.
Precisely.
That's what he said.
So the question is, what does it mean, I won't forgive you? Does it mean that I will always hold a grudge against you, which would be an Aveira? Or does it mean that I will never articulate the statement, I hereby forgive you? That's not an Aveira in the Torah. Bearing a grudge is one Aveira. A person can get rid of their grudge and still not have been mochel the person. A person can be mochel and still bear the grudge. Bearing a grudge and being mochel have nothing to do with one another. In which case, the shvua not to be mochel is not a shvua to bear a grudge. It's a shvua not to be mochel.
But it's obvious the person says that he doesn't mean use the word. That means that he has not been grudge.
Sorry, let's just one and then two.
But that's against what we've learned in the Torah, right?
It's against the Rambam. The question was posed to Rashi. Whoever was posing the question wasn't sure. And we'll see from Rashi's answer that Rashi says, I'll give it away. What does Rashi say?
That you're allowed to say it without meaning it.
That if you say it without meaning it, it still is a mechila. And if you mean it without saying it, it's not a mechila. And therefore, the shvua not to forgive is not a shvua to bear a grudge. You can fulfill the mitzvah of lo sitar without violating the shvua. Yes.
When a person makes a shvua in the moment of anger, he obviously means, it doesn't mean the word, I'm not going to say the word, it means his heart, I'm not going to forgive you. But can he do it like maybe like a yoledes? Yoledes also does a shvua, his mind later that she'll never leave her husband because of the extreme tsar, and then she changes her mind. So now
she has to bring a karma.
Later, she changes her mind. It didn't mean the word, it meant I'm not forgiving.
So there are ways to get out of shvuas. The question was whether you need to utilize one of those mechanisms or whether you can just say the shvua is null and void from its outset. That's the question. I'm sorry, I don't have any extra sheets. I've used up all of the sheets. Maybe if there's somebody who can...
Yeah.
can share. If there are two people who are sitting close to one another, maybe they can share. Then, okay. So
very popular
share. Yeah, it's good because yesterday I think that we had a couple of extras. So the question then the questioner continues and asks, and this is the second paragraph, if the oath did take effect, may he kiss the friend who hit him or speak with him in a loving manner as long as he doesn't verbalize his forgiveness or not? So Rashi responded, please. Rashi responded, you cannot treat this as an oath that negates a mitzvah because he certainly does not transgress a prohibition by bearing a grudge, since he was embarrassed and it's therefore impossible not to bear a grudge. Here Rashi is echoing what we mentioned earlier from the Gemara in Yuma, that it's permissible to bear a grudge for a personal affront. The only prohibition of lo sitaras b'nei amecha is to bear a grudge for someone's failure to help you get ahead. But if the person injures you, or if the person injures your feelings, it's totally permissible to bear a grudge. So therefore, Rashi says, this person, he slapped the other guy, he hurt him, he injured him. And therefore, there is no prohibition against bearing a grudge. Therefore, the shvua can't be considered a shvua levat alas hamitzvah. It can't be considered a shvua la'avar aveira, because there is no aveira, this is a permissible type of grudge. Nevertheless, continues Rashi, he who does not forgive is considered cruel. Rashi continues and says, there's no forgiveness greater than hugging and kissing him. Because it's written that when King David forgave Avshalom, the king kissed Avshalom. And since the verse does not say that the king verbalized his forgiveness, we don't find anywhere that David HaMelech said, Macholach, Macholach, Macholach. All it says is that David hugged him. This implies that kissing is a fine form of forgiveness.
Oh, you tried to kill him.
Yeah, that was very, very serious. And so here's a good etzah. You know, I know that some communities, this is a more common practice, that when you greet a person, so you hug them. And in other communities, it's less common. Sometimes can lead to a little bit of misunderstanding. But if a person wants to get mechila from somebody and the person is not verbalizing it, so you might be able to make a trick according to Rashi and to dress up in whatever, you know, and go ahead and hug the person. And if he hugs you back, so then he's been mochel you, even if he's holding out against declaring forgiveness.
Tradition amongst the Sfarim, right?
You can do it more directly. You can say to him, you know, listen, it's wonderful to see you. I'm glad you're here. Unfortunately, I took a shul. I'm not allowed to say the words that I'm mochel you, but it's nice to see you. I mean, there are expert speech makers who get around using certain terms that way.
Absolutely. So Rashi came up with a very innovative solution. Rashi says, the only solution I see for this oath is to bring 10 people and declare, I have sworn not to forgive him, and I don't know what to do. Then the other one, the one who hit him, should say, I've sinned against Hashem and against so-and-so whom I hit. And then the 10 people who gather for the occasion will say, it's permitted to you, meaning your shvua is mutar, and forgiven to you. So he sort of indirectly asked for mechila and achieved mechila, and then they're matir the shvua. Thus, both of them satisfy their obligation and their forgiveness stands. David really loved Avshalom.
That worked for me too.
Oh, you brought him out of Gehenna.
So what? You'll save me your life or not?
This is very important.
Coming up.
Okay, next. You know, we never get.
So I believe that this Rashi is actually consistent with what Rashi says in the Bamos. I don't have this here on the source sheet, But there's an amazing Rashi in Maseches Yevamos. And Rashi is discussing why it was that there were certain benefits, there were certain things that were missing in the Midbar. The Gemara says that the Jews in the desert were not performing the mitzvah of Bris Milah because there were certain healing elements of nature that were absent from the Midbar. And we know that Hashem was doing all sorts of wonderful things for the Jews in the Midbar. Why didn't he provide them with these healing elements in nature which would have enabled them to perform Bris Milah? And the Gemara brings two opinions. One opinion was because to provide them with that would necessitate dispersing the Ananei HaKavod, the clouds of glory, and it was better for them to have the Ananei HaKavod than to have these healing elements. The second opinion, though, in the Gemara, is that Hashem didn't give them these healing elements because Hashem was still upset about the Chet HaEgel. So 1 second.
He did not forgive them.
Hashem said, Salachti kidvarecha. I have forgiven them. And then he still, from that day and onwards, he still is not providing them these healing elements because he's upset about the Chet HaEgel.
He follows Rashi, that's what he did.
So the answer is that this is Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara. Rashi says that as long as you verbalize the declaration of forgiveness, it's okay, it's not a problem, it's not something that's missing, that's lacking from the Mechila, to continue to bear a permissible grudge about it.
But Hashem acted on it. You're not supposed to act on that grudge.
But this was permissible. Shomim Charpasam Ve'im Meshivim is Amidas Chasidos. Shomim Charpasam U'Meshivim is Midas Kal Adam. So Tosfos immediately challenges Rashi. Tosfos says, didn't Hashem say, Salachti Kidvarecha? If Hashem said, Salachti Kidvarecha, then he couldn't withhold this Ruach Tzafonis, this healing element from the Midbar. If it's a forgiveness, then it should mean that I'm fine. So therefore Tosfos says that Hashem really did forgive the Jews immediately after the Chet HaEgel, and that he, in the interim between the Chet HaEgel and the Chet HaMeraglim, these healing elements actually came back, they were present, and it was only after the Chet HaMeraglim that Hashem got upset again and took these away. So Tosfos seems to be following the Rambam. Tosfos says that a Mechila needs to be Belev Shalem U'Benefesh Chafetza, with a willing spirit, with a full heart, and if you still bear some sort of a grudge, be it an impermissible grudge, be it a permissible grudge, makes no difference. If there's a grudge, it's a lack, it's a problem, it's not a valid Mechila. Rashi,
a grudge is a grudge.
And it's also a failure to be Mochel. But Rashi is consistent. Rashi says that a person can be mochel with simply a verbal declaration, even without taking away all of the hurt, even without unburdening and freeing the heart from all of the bad feelings that were generated by the interpersonal affront. About the main Meriva, you mean?
Yes.
So let me split it three ways. Is it an impermissible grudge? Is it a permissible grudge? Or is it not a grudge at all?
How are we going to justify?
So I think there may be a machlokas we showed him about this. There's a discussion. I have to look up again where exactly it is. Why is it that when somebody steals from me, I'm allowed to sue them and get the money back? After all, isn't that bearing a grudge? They took some money away from me, and now I should forgive them right away. And forgiveness would mean that I just say, okay, I don't mind. It doesn't mean anything to me. You can, you know, let bygones be bygones. So there's a discussion. There is a discussion in Sifrei Halacha and Sifrei Machshava. Why is it that I'm allowed to take the person to court and regain the money that they stole from me? So I think that some will say, and again I want to look this up more to confirm, but some will say that it's not considered to be a grudge at all. It's simply, the money is mine wherever it is, and therefore I'm entitled to have it restored to me. or the peace of mind that this person took away from me is essentially mine, and I'm entitled to have that peace of mind restored. The person, let's say that he injured me. So health was mine, and now he took away my health, so he has an obligation to restore my health. It's not considered bearing a grudge. It's simply having restored to me what was taken away from me. So in that case, you would say that no, that Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu Kaviyachol, took away Hashem's peace of mind. He took something away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking is that it should be restored to him. However, you could also formulate it differently. You could say that in truth, if I really care about it, if it's not nothing to me, if it's something to me, even if it's something that I'm entitled to, that is considered to be a grudge, a permissible grudge, but a grudge nonetheless, and perhaps it's not so bad for a person to bear a permissible grudge until enough is done to appease him and to cause him to stop holding it.
A grudge has to have time attached to it. Because you just cannot have some grudge because of yesterday. If you carry it for a long time, then it becomes a grudge.
Interesting.
Something that happened yesterday is not a grudge. But if something happened yesterday and I remember it 6 months later, that's a grudge.
It's what you're saying is I haven't seen that anywhere. It's definitely possible. I would need to investigate it more as well. The Pashtos, yeah, I'd have to look into it more. Yes.
The Rav began with the classic example of what entails a grudge. A person asks to borrow something, and the next day the person says, "I'm going to lend it to you, but I'm not like you, and I'm going to lend it to you." So here you can see that bearing a grudge can be immediate. But that defines what a grudge is. A grudge is that you do the favor for the person, you help the person, but you in your heart you say words like, "I'm not like you. I'm not in your category. I'm better than you. And I am now going to do what the Torah says." So that's the grudge. Anything else, is, according to where the Rav defined the grudge, is not a grudge in the framework that we're discussing it.
Yeah, so Rashi does have this word. That's a very good point. Rashi says, Limachar. Limachar amar lo hashilini kardumcha. So almost already the next day, Rashi says that's already the prohibition of revenge against bearing a grudge. Limachar amar lo hashini malgalcha. Amar lo heilach eni kamoscha shalo ishatani. Zohi netira. It's a good rayah.
Very good.
What is it? What is it? Here is the thing. You can say, "I'd gladly give it to you," but he has a terrible grudge.
Yes, it's an interesting.
Why say the words out? Say, "Oh, that's the grudge."
It's not clear. It could be that the prohibition is even just to have it lodged in the heart. But there are some times where the prohibitions have different levels, starting out in the heart, going onwards to verbs, verbalization, and then moving onwards even to action. And there are a number of averos that are like that. And by each of these averos, there are discussions in the Rishonim about which phase. Is it the emotional cognitive phase? Is it the verbal phase? Or is it the active phase, which is the primary transgression? So that, like, for instance, lo sach mode, when a person is covetous. So I covet what you have. So the Rambam seems to contradict himself. In some places, the Rambam says that the Avera is to covet in your heart. And in other places, the Rambam says that the prohibition is to pressure the person verbally to sell it to you, or to give it to you. So which one is it? So there's discussions in the Achronim about which one is primary. Is it the covetousness in the heart, or is it the verbal pressure? But it's clear that the two of them really are symbiotic, that one of them gives rise to the other, and the only question is, formally speaking, when is a person formally transgressed? And the same thing could be said about netira. Part of it is in the heart, it's bearing the grudge, part of it is the verbal expression or the active expression, and there may be a question about formally when is one transgressed, but fundamentally it's a transgression that spans the mind and heart all the way to the person's actions. So, okay, we're not going to get to pages 3 and 4. Pages 3 and 4 are just basically, they're a list of examples where we find that even when it comes to Dine Mamanis, remember we began by talking about Mechilas Chovos. How is a person mochel? How does a person forgive a monetary debt? He says the debt is forgiven in front of two witnesses, and then the debt is forgiven. However, there are a number of examples in Shas where we find that that type of a forgiveness, even though it's enforceable in court, but the Hasidim HaRishonim, the particularly righteous people in each generation, refused to rely on it. They refused to rely on even a monetary forgiveness that was obtained under duress. And these are just a small list. I have a larger list of examples already. You find it also in other contexts as well. But I think that the tremendous Musar Haskel, which I want to just speak out before taking any last questions, from this shiur is the following. Certainly, it's a good thing to verbalize one's declaration of forgiveness. That's what we called at the beginning the shita of Yeshiva Darchei Torah. Everyone stands up and says, I hereby forgive anyone who sinned against me. That's the shita of Rashi, both in his tshuva and in Maseches Yevamos. It's certainly a good thing. However, it's important also to fulfill the shita of the Rambam, and it's not just important because it's a mitzvah in the Torah, it's important for a person's own well-being and sense of wholeness to somehow get it off their heart. Whatever it is, it's not a pleasant thing to bear a grudge. It's incredibly unpleasant to keep on being hurt every time you see a person, every time you think of something that somebody, it hurts. So for a person's personal peace of mind, for a person's equilibrium of the soul, it's important, but it's also important, says the Rambam, halachically. Because even if it's technically permissible to bear a grudge when there's been a personal affront, but it's also there's a bittul of a mitzvah if a person doesn't work on removing that grudge from his heart. And that's what Rav Eliyahu Lapyan said. He said, I'm going to learn extra musar for half an hour a day for the whole week in order to reach that state of being, the experience of having been mochel the person. In a different version of the shir, it would be something encourageable for a person to ask oneself, what is it that stops me from being mochel a person? In the past, what have been the biggest difficulties in erasing this grudge, in unburdening my heart of this bad feeling every time I think of a particular action? And then, what can I do to get around those blocks? What can I do to dissolve them? What can I do to really feel okay whenever I remember this particular circumstance that in the past, its recollection upset me? And so that's, I think, the tremendous musar from the Rambam, from Tosfos, and from Rav Eliyahu Lapyan, that in order to achieve the full forgiveness with a lev shalim and a nefesh chafetza, it's not an easy process. It's something that requires a lot of introspection, a lot of strategic and tactical planning as how to overcome the Yetzer Hara, but in the end of the day, the dividends are worth it, because in the end of the day, what a person achieves is a full peace of mind that they may never have experienced had they not worked on themselves and to rid themselves of the hurt that they feel when remembering what someone did to them.